From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Head underwater, and you tell me to breathe easy for a while. The breathing gets harder, even I know that.
Sarah Bareilles is having a big year. Her musical, Waitress, had a successful run and is headed for Broadway. She has an album out in November, and tomorrow she releases her memoir, Sounds Like Me. She bears it all, her first broken heart and the song it inspired, writing big radio hits while trying to stay true to herself, her struggle with body image in the spotlight, and her message, you are beautiful. This hour on Point, singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's your question for Sarah Bareilles on how she did it, made it, on what she wants you to hear? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Sarah Bareilles, five-time Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter. You know her from hits like Love Song, King of Anything, Brave. Her new memoir is Sounds Like Me, My Life So Far in Song. Her new album, her fifth full album, What's Inside, Songs from Waitress, is out in November. She wrote the music and lyrics to the musical Waitress, which is coming to Broadway in 2016. Sarah Bareilles in New York, welcome to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, good. And it's really fun to have you here. These are songs, you know, like big pop songs that we all hear. And I honestly didn't know a thing about you, except I realized I'd heard a whole bunch of your songs. And to dip into your memoir and see where the person behind that comes from is really fascinating. Not everybody shares in this depth. Why'd you do it, Sarah?
You know, I think I arrived at a place in my life where I'm craving more depth and a little bit, I don't know, there's a part of me that wants to share more deeply what's going on behind the scenes. You know, I have a younger sister and I have young nieces, and I think about them growing up and wanting them to know sort of my struggles and the things I thought about as my career was unfolding in front of me. And so I got approached about writing a book, which is something I never expected I would you know, explore. So I said yes, kind of not knowing what I was saying yes to. And
came to regret it, you saying it forward.
Oh,
this was hard to write,
God.
Harder than a pop song.
It takes a long time. It made me really appreciate my comfort level with writing music, I have to say.
There's a lot we want to hear about, you know, all kinds of things here. The new musical and old, you know, body image and first love and all that. Could you just take us to the story, and I guess it's kind of a famous one, or famously wrong, perhaps, around the song we were just hearing, your biggest hit, I guess, Love Song. You write in the book that the story of how this came to be has morphed over the years into an incredibly oversimplified version of the truth. I mean, the sort of, you know, rolls down the hillside version is Sarah is told by Music Mucky Mucks to write a love song, and she writes a song, not going to write you a love song, and boom, it's a hit. How did it actually come to be, Sarah?
You know, it was... The writing of the song was sort of a culmination of a few years of my experience as just a fledgling singer-songwriter and really struggling with trying to find and discover my own identity. I think I was someone who sort of fell into a career in music. It wasn't – I had always sort of dreamed that it was possible, but I wasn't actively pursuing it. So I was working in a restaurant and waitressing and then
this is like
playing bar gigs on the side.
2003 or so. You're out of UCLA and
just graduated UCLA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And was playing bar gigs on the side and sort of realizing that it was my passion by far, but I hadn't really done the math as to how to actually pursue a career in music. And, you know, over the course of those few years in Los Angeles getting started, I got so much feedback as to how many things I was doing wrong. And, you know, as I started kind of building a name for myself, at least within the LA mm-hmm. community, opportunities started to present themselves, and I met my manager after going on tour with Maroon 5 for the first time, and who happened to be college buddies of mine.
This was and Jordan then, Feldstein, I guess, at that time.
Exactly, yeah, yes.
Manager.
And, you know, once we got into the process of taking meetings and meeting with labels, I was getting so much negative feedback.
We should slow down a little bit here because it sounds like so fast from the bar gigs to the taking meetings with labels. There were lots and lots and lots of little tiny shows you put on all over L.A. at people's back porches and teensy tiny bars and the whole bit.
Sure. Yeah. No, I sort of said yes to everything. And then I learned over those couple of years that you can actually play too many shows, and then you've spread your audience too thin, and you're playing to your roommate and your aunt at a certain point. So, a lot of trial and error in my career,
including the very sound that you wanted to have. You said you had country songs and girly punk rock in there, and moody down tempo, and folky poetry songs, and jazz and musical theory. You said you tried to write hybrids of all those things.
Oh, yeah.
You say you used the word moonbeam a lot in those years.
I did. I'm such a music fan, and I had so many influences, and I wanted to emulate so much of what I loved about each different type of music, everything from musical theater to reggae. And, I think part of that is such a precious part about that stage in an artist's life or a singer-songwriter's life is that playful exploration. And, the feedback that I was getting that my shows were scattered or my image was confusing, it wasn't that they were incorrect about it, but I was in this place of really trying to discover for myself who I was. And I'm very stubborn. And as soon as someone's telling me not to do something, it is the first thing I'm going to do.
Could you dig in on that a little? It's so interesting. So you're all over the place. In other words, they want you to have one kind of consistent identity. You write in the book that as cringeworthy as it can be, I still sort of love this stage in a young artist's development. There's still a kind of fluid quality. But you write you didn't sound like Britney Spears or Jessica Simpson or Tori Amos or Norah Jones. Did you know what you hoped to be, what you wanted to be, and how willing were you to like stick by your guns to come out the other end of this with that sound?
I think what I was really willing to do was to be verbal about what I didn't like. I've always been someone who sort of I know more quickly what I don't like rather than what I do like. So sometimes it takes me a little bit longer to discover or to sort of develop my own vision for myself or my project or the record or the book. All of these things kind of fall into that category. But I do have a strong barometer in terms of when something arises and it doesn't feel like me or it doesn't feel authentic, that little red flag for me is a very loud experience. So I'm at least grateful that that's been in place since very early on in my career, which doesn't mean I didn't make mistakes. I look back on certain things and I'm like, oh, God, Sarah.
we were talking.
But, you're trying.
Yeah. We were talking just last week with John Seabrook, who's got this great new book out about sort of big Swedish powerhouse of pop songwriters, also very active in the U.S., Max Martin and Dr. Luke and all that, and how they would pluck people like Britney Spears or Rihanna and plug them in to an already kind of existing bed of music and a whole vision of what they were going to be. Your way wasn't that, but they did try and just plug you into being co-writer with prominent singers of their work. That sounded pretty awkward.
Oh, my gosh. The co-writing was excruciating. And I just felt so young. And I was 25 at the time. I mean, I look at some young artists out there, 18, 19 years old, and oh, thank God nothing ever happened to me when I was that young.
I mean, you come up out of your little tiny apartment and head up to, in a big house in Hollywood Hills or somewhere and sit down with some star. Let's write a pop song. Let's write a hit.
Right? I mean, these were successful co-writing teams who... And this is not to say that that's not a viable and valid creative experience. It's just for me at the time, I just wasn't sure as to what I was trying to say yet. And so trying to share the experience, which songwriting for me, I always describe it as that is my spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. That's like going to church for me. So sharing such an intimate space was just a no-go. And if I had had a little bit more agency at that point, I would have been able to just say, you know, everybody just back off and give me some time and let me go figure it out. But in a way, you know, when I look back in hindsight, I think the tension was good. I mean, that's where Love Song came from, was in part being encouraged to go down all these roads that didn't work and didn't feel right. And so in seeing so much come to fruition that I didn't connect with, I was desperate to find something that I did connect with. And ultimately, that's part of what spawned Love Song.
And in your life, we got 30 seconds before the break, so who weren't you writing a love song for? What was the dynamic there?
I think it was sort of to this nebulous sort of industry monster. It was there. No one ever said to me those words, mm-hmm. "We want you to write a love song." But I think it was like I was in my own little way kind of sticking it to the man.
Sarah Bareilles, sticking it to the man. And that wasn't the last time King of Anything became a huge hit off Kaleidoscope Heart in 2010. Her new memoir is Sounds Like Me, My Life So Far in Song. Sarah, it's great to have you with us. Stand by there in New York. Listeners, you can join us with Sarah Bareilles. Are you a Sarah Bareilles fan? Have you sung along with her in the car, in your earbuds, promising not to write a love song from her songs? How do you picture Sarah Bareilles? What matters to her? How do you picture that? Has she touched you, made you think, made you feel? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles, she of Gravity and Love Song and King of Anything, of Brave, now with a musical Broadway bound about the singer-songwriter life now, and hers in particular. She's out with a new memoir, tells a lot. It's called Sounds Like Me, My Life So Far in Song. 5 Grammy Award nominations, excerpt of her memoir at our website, onpointradio.org. You can join us this hour. Are you a fan? Has Sarah Bareilles touched you, made you think, made you feel? Women, does she sing for you? Does she feel like a friend? What's your question on the singer-songwriter life these days, on what it takes, on how it works now? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Behind us here, Undertow, off her first album, Careful Confessions. You can hear a lot of her jazz and musical theater influences in this song. More of that to come, and her album coming out in November off the musical Waitress, which is headed for Broadway. Lyrics and music written by Sarah Bareilles. Sarah Bareilles joins us from New York, and Sarah, a lot of callers for you already. Tiara in Delray Beach, Florida. You are on with Sarah Bareilles. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Sarah. I was just calling because, Sarah, you were one of my favorite artists of all time, and I actually have a 4-year-old daughter. And forever, we would drive in the car and listen to Disney music, and it started driving me crazy. I thought it was time to expand her musical horizons. So you were the first non-Disney CD she ever listened to, and she became obsessed with your song, Stay. And she thinks it says, let the waters fall out. So she thinks it's a bathtub song. So she sings it whenever she's taking a bath, and when we're in the car to request it, she has trouble with her L's, so she calls you Sarah Bondapas. And she is a huge fan, so I'm calling also on behalf of her. But just thank you so much for your music and your talent and everything. We love it.
Tiara, why do you think your four-year-old daughter likes this particular music? Is it because you like it, or is there something else? I mean, why not? You could have her listen to anything.
Yeah, I think that she likes to dance, so the beats definitely help. She loves moving, shaking her booty to it, and I think she likes that she can, for the most part, understand a lot of the words and sing along, and it is something that she sees that I like, so I think she likes that we share that together, and she knows if she has to put it on, that I'll like to listen to it too, so I'll say yes, like 100%.
Love it, love it. Tiara, thank you. Sarah, you've got a four-year-old fan and many, many others there. But yet,
I love it. That's not the worst butchering of my last name that I've ever heard, I promise. She's doing well.
Tiara loves it. Her daughter loves it. But you say that the record executives told you a lot at first about all the things you were doing wrong. What did that mean? You weren't sounding like what? Or you should sound more what?
Oh, God, I heard everything. I mean, it was... I think that the underlying message that I was picking up on that was mostly tacit was we don't hear radio hits. So, I remember actually the day that I wrote Love Song, I was driving to a rehearsal space that I was sharing with some friends of mine. And I was listening to the radio, and I knew that everybody wanted the single that they could lead, you know, the album with and put out on the radio.
Yeah, break out.
And I was, yeah, exactly. And I was listening to the radio, and I sort of caught myself trying to bite off of just something that was on the radio. I don't remember what it was.
In other words, maybe a version of that, something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I was so furious with myself. I was so disappointed, and it was sort of like this reckoning moment where I caught myself drinking the Kool-Aid. And I went to the rehearsal space, and I sat down, and to be honest, I sort of just said a prayer. And I just wanted some semblance of a reminder of the purity that was at the heartbeat and the center of mm-hmm. where I had been writing music from in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, I really have to say, like, the chords came pouring out, the words came pouring out. It was very honest. And, I wrote the majority of that song in, less than an hour, which is, I'm not usually a fast writer like that. So it felt like this very cosmic connection to some place in myself that I really needed to feel again. So that song will always be, I'm so grateful to it for many reasons, but mostly because it became sort of my lighthouse in that moment of confusion.
A lot of your music sounds much less highly produced than so much of what we hear now. Is there always pressure at your door to crank that up, to bring on a huge beat bed and, team up with a hip-hop guy to come in and add, a chorus of millions and all kinds of synth? And is that always out there, or have you established your identity now so you're not vulnerable to that?
I think that, if there was a way for that to feel organic or mm-hmm. authentic, then never say never, I think that I tend to be, I'm a little bit old school in that way. My favorite influences and the artists that have made such a difference in my life are people like Carole King and Paul Simon and Joni Mitchell. And, so it's, I'm a little bit, I feel like I have a little bit of an old soul, even though, I am quote unquote competing in a contemporary music world. But, I think that, like I said, I do have a strong sense of what feels authentic to me. And so it's not that I haven't sort of tried to go down that road a couple of times. I get that mm-hmm. it would be easier from the business aspect, but it's sort of just not who I am. So I have to kind of honor that as best I can, too.
Let's go back to maybe who you are or who you were on your very first album. I think Gravity was the first song you wrote. You were 19, you write in the book that Gravity was an expression of my first real encounter with heartbreak, the first time I really remember feeling catharsis through writing, from Careful Confessions in 2003 and on Little Voice in 2007, Sarah Bareilles' Gravity.
You loved me 'cause I'm fragile.
Sarah Bareilles with Gravity. First song. First, Love Lost. And
yeah.
It went big, but we can still see you as the teen, you know, with the tear-stained notebook, somehow struggling out that first poetry that became a song.
Yeah, it's so funny. I sound so young to myself now on this recording.
Yeah, you're so old now.
I'm so old, Tom.
not. But it goes by. 19 is not forever, is it?
No. No, and I love this song because it was... it surprised me. And it became this very pure point of connection with my fans. And it was... they wanted... Actually, this is not in the book, but they wanted this to be the second single, and I've been... put back in the studio, and they added a bunch of drums, and they wanted to repeat the chorus, and that's when I was really grateful to have Jordan Feldstein as my manager, because mm-hmm. he fought hard for me in that moment. It just wasn't the song. You know, this song was never meant to be anything more than the intimate expression that it ended up being. So, and this song it's to this day, it's one of the most requested songs, and I think people can really relate, sadly, to just feeling like they're stuck on someone. And that was it took me forever to get over that guy.
You tell the whole story in the memoir, Sounds Like Me. You insist you were the chubby girl, but I'm looking at these photos and it's hard to exactly see it. I mean, the cover, this is like babissima here, a long way from chubby, but that was an issue in your youth. And then the drop-dead, good-looking jock, Mr. Personality, he falls for you, and getting over that, ultimately breaking up, pretty tough. We'll talk about it. We've got callers for you. Nancy in Nashville. Nancy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Love your show. Hi, Sarah. This is so striking my heart here. I'm a 56-year-old girl. Still struggling with my own. You talk about your authentic, being your true authentic self. Mm. Spent years in a marriage with a narcissistic personality person. Mm. That I'm the empath. It sounds like you're an empath, an intuitive person. And to make a very long story, I could talk to you for hours about this topic, but we as women and girls, how we end up with this negative speak, I'm trying to take a stand against that in the world for girls. I hear you say you did so many things wrong. You didn't do anything wrong. You never did anything wrong. You were going down your path, and I encourage you, I encourage myself, I encourage every girl, woman, vulnerable, sensitive person out there, you're finding your own barometer. You have a gift. If you're able to go down multiple paths and you're multifaceted and can see, you have multiple talents, that's not wrong. You're just extremely gifted. And
Nancy, let us take it to Sarah Bareilles, and I appreciate your call from Nashville. We're talking with singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Okay. Are you a lighthouse for women, young women, body image, or you name it? That's the way you strike Nancy in Nashville, Sarah.
I think that's an incredible compliment, and I certainly relate to the sensitivity and the idea of being an empath. I think I'm someone who feels very deeply for the human experience, and I've always had a real penchant for melancholy. I think it's really easy for me to access sadness, and in a way that makes me feel close to people, you know, because I feel like I understand their pain. But I think what Nancy said is a really valid point to sort of examine the way we speak of ourselves and of our choices. I don't look back on my path and feel like I made wrong choices. I agree that I was on my path, and what I did was had to and continue to have to learn to practice trusting myself. You know, our intuition is there for a reason, and it's very strong, and we all have to kind of learn to do that gut check. And I think for women, I don't know if it's harder, but I do think that we are socialized differently than men are. And I think having that gut check and having the confidence and courage to sort of speak up from that very true place is something that we have to continue to practice and to encourage in the next generation of women.
The new memoir from Sarah Bareilles is Sounds Like Me. She has an essay in there called Beautiful Girl, a series of letters to her own younger selves about all the sort of tough stuff they'll have encountered, but each one says to the reader, you are beautiful, sort of echoes Beautiful Girl, B-side to the single Stay from 2012.
And I know how much it can sometimes hurt. You feel like the whole world has made you the ugly girl. Take it from me that you have to see it first. So before you trade in your summer skin for those high-heeled shoes to make them wanna be with you, let me remind you one more time that just maybe you're beautiful, but you just can't see. So why don't you trust me? They'll see it too, you beautiful girl, you.
Little ukulele and a lot of Beautiful Girl there from Sarah Bareilles. Fran in Milton, Massachusetts, you're on with Sarah.
Oh, hi, Sarah. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for having me take my call. I just wanted to share that I'm a yoga teacher, and I'm often looking for music to build up people. You know, I think a lot of people show up at yoga needing a little, support. And I find that I'm constantly turning to your song, Sarah, to float into my playlist. And they don't disappoint. So I just want to thank you for the gifts that you give.
Oh, that is so kind. Thank you. Thanks for what you do as well. Yoga has been important to me in my life, too. So thank you.
Thanks for calling, friend. Do you try to be the purveyor of positive messages, Sarah, or is that just baked in?
I think I do, in a way. I think I would love to look back on my legacy of music and feel like I was encouraging sort of the glass half full perspective, knowing that we can't pretend that the other doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But if I can sort of be a champion for positive self-speak, then I'd love to do that. Also because I need to hear it myself. You know, it's a little fake it till you make it sometimes.
Fake it till you make it on the positive side, but it's got to be real to come through in the music. It does with Sarah Bareilles. Her new memoir Sounds Like Me, My Life, so far in song. She's written the music and lyrics for a musical as well, Waitress. We'll talk about that, hear a little bit of that when we return. Sarah Bareilles joins us from New York. You can read an excerpt of her memoir at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can join us. Do you sing along with Sarah Bareilles? 800-423-8255 is our number. This is Manhattan from her most recent album, 2013, The Blessed Unrest. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
You can have Manhattan. I'll settle for the beach. And sunsets facing westward with sand beneath my feet. I wish there's a way, this missing the days when I was one half of two. You can have Manhattan, 'cause I can't have you.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
You said, remember that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles. She of Gravity and Love Song, now with a musical Broadway bound about the singer-songwriter life now. And hers in particular, she tells a lot in her new memoir, Sounds Like Me, My Life So Far in Song. Sarah Bareilles joins us today from New York. You can join us as well. Have you had to struggle in your life to stay true to yourself and succeed? Has Sarah Bareilles inspired you in her songs to stick up, stand up for yourself, your own way? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. There's a great bit in the memoir, Sarah, where your friend sent you an email. Maybe you were struggling at the time, which had a bit of a letter. I think a letter from Martha Graham, the choreographer, dancer, to Agnes DeMille. We're getting back there. The actress, I guess. And one of the paragraphs here talks about how artists just are never satisfied. It says, no artist, this is Martha Graham writing, no artist is pleased. There's no satisfaction whatever at any time. There's only a queer, divine dissatisfaction, a blessed unrest, became the title of your album, that keeps us marching and makes us more alive than others. That was Martha Graham's experience. Has it been yours, Sarah?
I think it was just such a beautiful framing to this sense in myself that was brewing at the time. I just was looking around at my life, and I didn't feel like I was on fire. And I was living in LA at the time, and went through a series of really hard decisions and chose to leave LA. And it was at the end of a 6-year long-term relationship with my boyfriend at the time. Chose to go out in a new musical direction and split with my band that many of them I had been playing with for about 10 years. And not long after that was a split with my long-term manager, with Jordan. So it was a kind of a a reckoning for myself. And this quote, for some reason, I gained so much comfort from this idea that there was something sort of divinely ordained that was guiding me towards a place that would be more resonant or a deeper connection to my purpose. And, you know, from the other side of a lot of those decisions, I think it was right. You know, whatever I was feeling that was all this dissatisfaction, I just liked the idea that it could actually be because it was coming from a good place, that I was being pulled towards something better. And I was.
You got in a fight, I should say Jordan, I mean, the reports are anyway, he got in a fight with the Osbournes at a pre-Grammy gala. You fired him. I mean, this is your first manager who was so important to you. I think brother of Jonah Hill and childhood friend of Adam Levine with the Maroon 5 and important to you. Did you fire him because he got in a scuffle with the Osbournes or because it was time for a new way?
No. Yeah, of course not. No, it was a complicated scenario. And I have a lot of gratitude for those 10 years that Jordan and I worked together, and I wish him the absolute best. But I think, you know, we both did a lot of growing up, and, you know, I signed with him when I was 25. I'm 35 now, and or I signed with him a little bit earlier than that, actually. So I was at a time where I was kind of reassessing my life choices and needing to kind of step out into a new independent space and rebuild from the ground up. So, yeah, that's where I've ended up.
The Blessed Unrest. And now comes your involvement in what is now a Broadway-bound musical. You describe in the memoir how into musical theater you were as a kid. Oklahoma, Les Mis, and Miss Saigon, and all the rest. Let's listen to just a little bit. This is off the this is a single off the album What's Inside, Songs from Waitress. This is out due out November 11th. She Used to Be Mine.
It's not easy to know I'm not anything like I used to be, although it's true I was never attention's sweet center. I still remember that girl. She's imperfect, but she tries. She is good, but she lies. She is hard on herself. She is broken and won't ask for help. She is messy, she's kind. She is lonely most of the time. She is all of this mixed up and baked in a beautiful pie. She is gone, but she used to be mine.
Sarah Bareilles, new single, She Used to Be Mine, from her upcoming album What's Inside. Songs from Waitress, the Broadway-bound now musical. Beth in Binghamton, New York. Beth, thanks for calling from Binghamton. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Tom. Hi, Sarah. What an absolute delight to speak with both of you. This is great.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hello. In a perfect segue to what you were just speaking about, Sarah, I'm so curious. Waitress was one of my favorite movies. How you happened to segue into Broadway and how that all came about?
I received a phone call from my theatrical agent not long after I had transplanted to New York City, and I was told that there was this project that was in the beginning stages of production, and would I take a meeting with the director, a woman named Diane Paulus, and I knew nothing about the movie. I had heard of the movie, but I hadn't seen the movie. I knew nothing about Diane. I knew nothing about any of this. And we sat and had lunch at a restaurant in Times Square, and she told me about the film and would I consider taking a stab at being a musical theater composer. And it was a really exciting proposition in that moment. It felt very intimidating, to be honest. But I mean, this is my first love, like the genre of music that I grew up on. And then I watched the film, and I was so struck by the unique storytelling and the kind of eccentricity of the world that Adrian Shelley built in this film. And Diane and I had such a nice conversation, and I sort of said yes with the caveat that you know, if at any point I was really screwing this up, someone was going to tap me on the shoulder and tell me.
Exit stage left.
Yeah, exactly. You know, take a hike. But, you know, it has really developed to be a life-changing experience. Everything about me has chemically altered because of my involvement with this show. I have fallen madly in love with this process and with this storytelling. And I feel like in a lot of ways it has completely revitalized my creative self. And I'm just on cloud nine about it. Also, I think being at a place where I realize how precious it is to love something so deeply. You know, it's the way I felt about my music when I was first starting and making the first record. You only get to do that one time. So this is my first show, and I'm definitely on the honeymoon phase.
Unusual path for this show. I mean, a movie first, and then Diane Paulus, who's artistic director at the American Repertory Theater, just across the river here in Cambridge, Massachusetts, says, hey, come in and write this for us. What was it like to sit down and see that? Maybe you could tell us in a nutshell the story and then how you approached it as a new Broadway composer.
Yeah, the story follows the lead character, Jenna, who's in this sort of nondescript southern town, and she's a brilliant pie maker, works in a pie diner, and has two waitress friends that sort of are her little community. And she's in a marriage to an abusive husband and gets pregnant by way of her husband and doesn't want the baby. And so it follows her journey through this pregnancy and an affair with her gynecologist and her wanting to leave her husband and leave her life and sort of come to this moment of seeing herself in a life that she's built around her and kind of doesn't recognize her. And that there's a scene in the movie where she's saving money to leave her husband and he discovers the money. And so her dreams of leaving to go win this pie contest that has, you know, like a huge grand prize. Mm-hmm. Her dreams are dashed. And I just remember that scene in the movie being so striking, and you watch this woman really fall apart. And I wrote She Used to Be Mine about that scene in the movie. And through writing that song, I found so much of myself in this character. I mean, this is just after I had made all those sort of grand life decisions to break
ditch
out.
Ditch the band, ditch the manager,
yeah,
leave LA.
All of those things. So there was this really kind of poignant connection that I felt like I was making with this character. And I saw so much of myself in her story, even though the circumstances were very different. But so that was, I just started writing their story. And then it became so exciting to find my way into the psyche of these different characters, you know, writing for the oddball accountant who falls in love with one of the waitresses, you know, finding a way to give his soul a voice was such a blessing. It was so much fun. The whole process for me from a writing perspective was so playful, and it was really exciting that way.
And now Waitress out of the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge is headed for Broadway, March 2016. Sarah Bareilles with the music and lyrics there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Katie in Andover, Massachusetts. Katie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Sarah. I am so excited to be speaking with you right now, Sarah. I'm a huge fan. I'm a singer-songwriter myself, and I find your music so inspirational, and it really speaks to me. I loved Waitress. I saw it for my birthday. I bought myself the tickets for my own birthday.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I sent you my CD because I wanted you to hear one of my songs was inspired by you and your music. So I had to call in today and just see if you had any, like, one tidbit for someone who's just starting out as a singer-songwriter, what would you say?
I think, you know, in my experience, my greatest learning moments were on stage. I think that it's really important to go play your music for people and to really cultivate a relationship with listening to the audience. And it's not about kind of catering towards them necessarily, but it is about really listening to kind of the synthesis that happens in the moment. I think there were songs that I wrote that I thought were, you know, incredible songs, and you play them for people and you realize they're not connecting. And it's all just really wonderful information as to how you as a storyteller, as a communicator, can kind of build that muscle. So every young artist I meet, I always tell them, go play shows. And that's the best way to build a fan base. I think it's we don't want to put the cart before the horse too much, but I think it gets really easy to get attached to some idea of, you know, you get plucked out of wherever, and you know, something blows up online or on TV or on the radio. But really to cultivate a fan base for me was always from a grassroots perspective, and that's been really valuable over the years.
Katie, there's your nugget here from 2013, The Blessed Unrest, Brave.
Nothing's gonna hurt you the way the words do when they settle near your skin. Kept on the inside and no sunlight, sometimes a shadow wins. But I wonder what would happen if you say what you want to say.
There with Jack Antonoff from Fun and Bleachers. He's also written songs with Taylor Swift. Sounds a little Taylor Swifty to me, or is that just the way you're performing it, Sarah?
I don't know. I think that, you know, from a production standpoint, this is certainly a slick production.
Yeah. And that tempo.
Yeah. And that's what Jack is so adept at. He just is this anthemic writer, and it just is in his veins, and that's, it was so exciting to collaborate with him because he's deeply rooted in a pure intention, but he also, you know, he makes you think about singing to thousands of people, and it's really beautiful.
You know, you said you're 35. Talking with you today, listening to the music, it's good to hear a singer-songwriter who's come to this point in age and success, still young, a lot to go, without the good stuff being ground out of you. That seems like a good place to be.
I'm very grateful. I really am. I look at what's happening in my life right now, and I can't help but I just want to say thank you.
Are you going to come back to the straight-on pop world, or is it Broadway squared for you?
I don't think I'm done. I mean, who knows? But I'd like to, in my perfect world, you know, all roads are open at this point. So I'd like to keep going down some different pathways.
That's a whole lot of travel going on there, but it sounds good. It sounds really good. Sarah Bareilles, come see us when you're in Boston next time. Thank you very much for being with us today. Good luck with all of it. The new memoir Sounds Like Me, My Life So Far in Song. Sarah, thanks.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. We go out with Gonna Get Over You. This is On Point.